Welcome back to ILTA Voices, your home for all things ILTA.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled How and When to Train Attorneys for Best Long-Term Technology Success. I'm your moderator, Jenny Ong. I'm a legal innovation manager at Greenberg Traurig. And I'm joined today by two panelists, Jake Brown, who's the head of legal technology at Joseph, and Anna Toth Nielsen, who is an attorney development innovation manager here at Greenberg Traurig. So Jake, do you want to give a brief introduction of yourself and what you do?
Sure. Thanks, Jenny. As mentioned, my name is Jake Brown, head of legal technology here at Joseph. But as is relevant for this conversation today, I come to that role through customer success manager roles at a couple different legal technology companies, and ultimately made the move over to legal technology vendor side after being the young pesky is maybe one word for it, but let's go with precocious associate at a firm that was always asking, why are we doing it this way? What about this? What about that? And so just became fascinated with the different tools that were out there to enhance the way that the practice flow is actually done. And so then I finally followed that passion a couple different steps down the road, and here we are.
Thanks. And Anna?
Hi, as Jenny said, my name is Anna Toth Nielsen. I am the Attorney Development Innovation Manager at Greenberg Traurig. I'm actually under the Professional Development Center here at Greenberg. So my role is really truly to ensure that our associates and attorneys are effective with the various different tools that we have at GT to do their legal research or other types of legal technology, again, just to be extremely efficient with their time during the day. So how did I get here? I actually have been working in the legal research field for about 20 years. I'm a JD MLIS. Prior to coming to Greenberg, I did work on the vendor side, and then I switched and I was a research attorney, but I was a reference librarian answering research questions and really just missed doing a lot of the training and outreach, and fell into the Greenberg role and have been super happy here assisting our attorneys with their legal research needs.
All right. Thanks to you both. So our conversation today is going to focus on some insights and tips from you both on training attorneys and technology to ensure that they're up to speed and adaptable to the new technologies for the future, especially with AI now, you know, the rapid push of AI into all these tools. It just feels like technology is really at the forefront of the legal practice. So the first question is just, let's look at the basics. What are some general considerations that you should have when you want to roll out new technology? And I guess first I'll go to Jake.
Yes. While I think that there are certainly general practices that we would all agree on are positive things, and I think we might get into that in a little more nuance later, at kind of enabled to pick out the nuances of any particular rollout that you're going to be attempting, it's, in my opinion, one of the key things to do is understand the current landscape of where that rollout is going to happen. So, you know, has a problem statement been clearly defined? Do we have the current state mapped? Who are our stakeholders? Have they been engaged? Who's going to be championing this? Who might not want this to go super well, you know, and like asking all those hard questions and really getting into that and having a clear picture of where you're going, I think will help avoid some of the pitfalls. Then the only other high level thing that I would mention is just making sure that you have your success criteria both defined, and then make sure it's trackable and achievable.
That's such a good point. I never really thought about who might not want to have something go well. That's a good perspective there. And Anna, anything to add from you?
For me, I think I have a couple of points. The first one is need analysis. What do we actually need? Is there a need of the new technology, or do we already have a program or platform that fulfills that need that maybe our attorneys or just our audience in general don't know how to maximize that tool? So really looking at the need first. The next is compatibility. Are there issues with compatibility already with our systems and technology? Would it cause problems with legal technology or other types of tech? You know, it's not just legal technology and platforms. There's so much more to that as well. Again, kind of how Jake referenced was user acceptance. Is it easy to use? Is the technology easy? Is there a huge, learning curve on the technology because we want them to actually use it? And of course, training. What is your plan for training? How are you going to roll out the training that kind of goes hand in hand with support? Because they're actually two different things. You have your initial training, and then what else do you need as support? Do you need training handouts? Do you need, open office sessions, things of that nature? So it's kind of two completely separate, but of course go hand in hand. And if Jake kind of alluded to it, was the implementation plan. That's really is your timeline, responsibilities. What are the milestones? What are you really trying to accomplish? And before you even do any of that, is having a testing group who can test out all of the different technologies to really focus on the different issues that probably will arise because nothing ever goes as smoothly as we would like. So it's to really try to break it essentially before rolling it out to the rest of the firm. And of course, with evaluation, making sure that we have different evaluations to see the success of the technology, either with a pilot program, if you're testing it out before you roll it out, to see is it really worth the investment to go forward with the actual, legal technology program, platform, whatever it may be at that moment.
Thanks, Anna. That kind of leads into the next question, which, at least from your role, and I know a lot of the technology exposure and training happens during onboarding, maybe whether it's new attorneys or laterals. How do you balance that early exposure to these legal tools against allowing those maybe baby attorneys to gain a really footing in their new role as an attorney? How do you balance those two things?
Absolutely. So when we do onboarding, it's so important that they know that it's not just a box, a checklist that they need to go through the training and information. Most of the time, because we do have new attorneys or laterals, they do see the importance of legal technology. It's really learning about the legal technology at the firm, not just legal technology generally. Also, balancing learning styles. Do you learn more by doing, in the sense of you know what's out there, but you need to work with it for a little bit and then come back for additional support? And of course, training programs, allowing, as you said, Ginny, for them to really focus on the core content. Because as we know, law school doesn't always teach them some of the core content and some of the practice areas. And also just learning how their department does it, meaning how is it their way, their shareholder, their practice group. And then, of course, getting feedback along the way to make sure that they are getting what they need and the tools are fulfilling the different tasks that they are trying to accomplish. And using it as a support, meaning they can find some of that core content in the different platforms. It's not just about doing research or creating a TOA. Those resources can actually help them learn as well. So making sure that they understand that it's more than just finding a case or a statute or some sort of trick, it can actually support them along their way in their professional development.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I actually had that experience that some of these tools that I've used in my past roles as an attorney really actually helped me learn core legal concepts. That's a great point. And Jake, how about you?
I think Anna did a phenomenal job of capturing like what does it look like in getting newer attorneys to adopt the technology suite as it's it, I love that you called out like the different practice areas, the way that each one goes about it. Yeah, sometimes we know that can even be different from office to office.
For sure.
So I'll instead just kind of focus a little bit more, obviously coming from that vendor side of
Right.
bringing in new technologies and doing, kind of looking at it from that lens instead, just to kind of complement what Anna has already said. And I think one of the key things that I've seen in my different roles at several different legal technology companies is more than anything, just creating the space so that the ones that want to self-select in have the support and are met kind of in that just-in-time training model to where they have a need, have interest, and then you can upskill them quickly for that particular need and kind of capture them when that want will match the effort that will take to learn how to use something new to do a process, hopefully in a better way than it was being done already. The one thing that I would add, kind of zooming out a little bit farther, is just simply, I think that firms are uniquely in a position to be able to push on law schools, as was already mentioned. Like there's some aspects there on where, new attorneys are being drawn from, and making sure that even if a law school hasn't fully equipped a new grad to know a whole suite of different tools, introducing them to whatever that suite is or suites of tools, just so they have some of the foundation to come in. I find it's just as important to have the ability to learn new technologies and how they fit into the new core responsibilities that you're learning. Kind of having a foundation in one of those then makes the other hopefully a little bit easier. And I think that there's space, especially for summer associates and the work that's being done in law schools to do some of that introductory space for technology when, there's not the billable hour requirement hanging over your head at the same time. So kind
Definitely.
of getting to it before you even have that one or the other problem, I think is something that is I'm seeing more and more law schools do. Like we have run programs with law schools that have been amazingly effective and at teaching the tools to people who haven't been exposed to them before they're even practicing. But I think that that's a space that still has a lot of room for growth.
Jake, I love you said that because I didn't mention in my intro, but I'm also an adjunct professor and I teach,
Yes,
yes,
awesome.
I teach legal research and law practice technology. And that's exactly what I try to do with my students is that their world is just two particular vendors in law school, and there's so much more than that. And, it's a balance of making sure they understand the fundamentals, but also the exposure. Just knowing that other tools exist is part of the process. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. And I think it is definitely a big need as well.
Yeah, I think exposure, that's the perfect word to kind of sum up a lot of that
Yes.
discussion. And that kind of leads us to the next question I had for you both, which this is really the opposite end of the spectrum is, we have a lot of more experienced attorneys who are have done things a certain way, people that have been in the practice for 30 plus years. How do you manage those users who are more set in their ways? When you know that technology is really the future, or a required element of entering the legal practice or continuing in the legal practice, how do you approach that older generation, especially if they're less tech savvy, who didn't train in law school or earlier in their career in a lot of this? Jake, you want to take that? Oh, okay. Never mind. I thought you were muted. You're good.
No worries. I think a helpful framework that I've personally tried to take to this, just to set my own expectations and remember that this is a marathon and not a sprint, is just remembering the technology adoption curve. Like, and if you're not familiar with it, look it up. There's some amazing articles as applied to particularly law firms and kind of the legal industry more generally, that I think are really worth a look and understanding for anyone involved in this space. But kind of with that in mind, like there are going to be people who are slower on the uptake because of their view on, it sounds very large to say life, but the way that they look at and think about how they go about their practice will mean that they are later on that adoption curve. That being said, that's kind of the foundational element through which I look at this. And so the key thing is in my mind, messaging at that point. Obviously, this is where the practice is going. Is very easy messaging for younger attorneys. But when you get people who are kind of in that place where they've done their years as an associate, about to transition into a partner, I actually find that that's the hardest group, because they've been, for lack of a better term, indoctrinated a little bit on how certain things have always been done, and they've kind of paid their dues, is I think the way that they have kind of that mentality of that a little bit, and so I think helping them understand that the transition is, as they transition to partner, their mindset also gets the ability to transition away from that just purely hourly, have I hit my billables? Then you start thinking about revenue and profitability. And when you can start thinking in like the business of a law firm and get somebody at that age and that stage to kind of transition their mindset, all of a sudden they become a lot more open to the use of new tools. And one thing I'll call out there, even if it's not them using it, even if it's them having the now more junior people on their tasks and their matters using these tools, it opens them up with that different mentality. And then, kind of leading into that, you can think about the equity partner who's been in the corner for longer than most people have been at the firm. A lot of times they already have that mentality, so they want to do well for their clients and then want to do well for the firm. And so their focus is not necessarily going to be blocked by that purely hourly model. It's going to be looking at it as a business. And so the key thing there, and I'm going to put the onus, I think, to a certain degree on, and I would say to a large degree on, vendors in this part of the conversation, to say, is your tool usable by somebody who doesn't want to use your tool? And so, like, unpacking that a little bit, are there ways to take information out of your tool and let people digest it in, depends on what it is, obviously, but Word, email, other places where they're familiar and used to being, so that they can engage with your tool, help the younger person, the associate who's doing the bulk of the work itself, on a particular matter, help them use your tool. So that's one thing that I think is really, really important, is to be able to meet people where they're at.
I really like that point about, sometimes the corner office partner might not need to use the tool themselves, but to at least be an advocate for the newer attorneys, they recognize that it's something that is crucial. Maybe they don't want to have to spend their time learning it, but they understand the importance. That's a great point. And Anna, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a huge portion, is having those advocates, those key stakeholders that see the value, but it doesn't necessarily weave into what they have to do on a daily basis with their workflow. But I think Jake hit a really good point, and what I, always try to stress is understanding there's perspective, is understanding and just having, kind of going back to my librarian hat, is an intake interview. What is their day like? What are the tasks that they're doing? What can make their life easier? And you said it earlier, Jake, and I always learn that on my vendor side, is it's what they want at the moment. It's not what you think that they want or what they need in the future. It's what can make a task easier today. Because then, if they figure out how to use that task and it's like, wow, that really helped me, that really highlighted a benefit and made something easier, I'm going to go back for more and find out another tool. And I think that's really what it is being patient, doing that intake interview, understand their perspective. What is their daily workflow? What are their pinpoints? How can some of this technology, and I think that that's really important, is whoever's speaking is to understand your, depth of all of your different tools, not necessarily have to be an expert in every tool, but have an understanding of the tool so that you can kind of insert which tool will help them with that particular task and connect them with the right people to then move forward. So really, truly is having that patience, and you said it earlier, is it's not a sprint. They're not going to want everything right. I mean, there may be people that way, but it's really having that patience of maybe it's just one tool today. In 10 days, it's another tool, and really making sure that they understand the different tools and understand what can also be very helpful to their other associates as well.
Thanks, Anna. And I think to round this out, I know we've kind of touched on a lot of these, a lot of this topic of kind of measuring success of technology adoption. I think you've kind of both touched on this throughout the description you've given, but Anna, do you have any additional thoughts on how do you measure success of technology adoption, maybe within the law firm here at Greenberg Torrick?
Generally with measuring success, I said it before, evaluations. I mean, that's always a tried and true of getting evaluations, but also targeted feedback. Who is exactly using the tools? Maybe you go to the top users and get their feedback on what's working, and not just the top users, those that created a password but never used it. Why didn't they used it? Was it because they just never got around to it, or was it something that they just, shied them away from using it because of XYZ? So really getting that targeted feedback. Another one that I know it's kind of hard sometimes, and it's kind of been a pet project of mine in the background, is how does it decrease legal research costs for the client? Is there a way to kind of track that and see if there is a decrease in those costs? Because, as Jake alluded, this is a business. How can we create different cost effectiveness, not just for the clients, but also for the associates and attorneys as well? And then, of course, user adoption rates. That's always, how many people was it rolled out to? How many are actually utilizing it? And also, in that targeted feedback is performance improvement. Are they seeing more, is it making their life easier? Are they writing better briefs? Are they finding the information faster? Whatever it may be. And so it's kind of all intertwined together. So, really trying to get, I think, truly, honestly, that targeted feedback can be really, really helpful in seeing what are the next steps with that legal technology.
Thanks, Anna. Jake, do you have anything to add?
I thought that was a phenomenal summary.
Thank you.
So I think just one thing that I would expand on really more than anything, specifically on that adoption rate side, I think that there's a lot of gold that is sometimes it requires some front-end work to be able to gather and understand that information. But in terms of making like an ROI case on a yearly basis, was that you have to do for tools, or even just understanding how a tool is, permeating throughout the firm. The key thing that I think that I encourage people to look at in that adoption is looking at it in terms of the percentage of matters where the tool could, would, should be used. In addition to in just like number of seats or number of like we have 50 real estate associates, we wanted all 50 to be using them in 35 are. Maybe that's good, maybe it's not. But if we then instead look at, yes, those 35, there are 35 out of the 50, but wow, we ended up using it on 95% of the real estate matters where this particular tool could be leveraged. That is all of a sudden a really in-depth, true to form statistic that will allow you to kind of go beat the drum around the success of the tool.
Absolutely.
Great perspective. Yeah. And I mean, this is all very helpful for me. I'm going to be involved in and running numerous pilots throughout the rest of this year. So I'm going to have to come back and watch this conversation again. But yeah, I think that's kind of all we have time for today. But you guys, this was a really great conversation. And thank you both for joining us today. And I hope those who are tuning into this will find great value in this conversation that we had. So thank you both.
Thank you for inviting me and having me today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.